Hi, Anthony CK here. I want to tell you about a very special Page 4 live event. At 8 p.m. on February 12th, Page 4 Music and Page 4 Entertainment are joining forces for live podcast taping at 1010 Studios in Long Island City, New York. Come right at 8 p.m. to hear me play a set of music and enjoy complimentary champagne and beer. You'll also be able to take in exhibitions of art by Shiny Design and Jesse Winter, the proprietor of 1010 Studios. At 9, you can take to 1010's upstairs gallery space as we tape a live podcast hosted by Leanne Saltzman of Page 4 Music and Jennifer Faulkner of Page 4 Entertainment. The topic of the podcast is partnerships in life and love. So whether you're looking for a creative partner, a business partner, or a romantic partner, there are many through-line themes to examine. We'll talk about these and more with our special guest, therapist Gretchen Thomas Sophocleous. With more than a decade of professional therapeutic experience, Gretchen brings a bevy of insight to the discourse. Should you choose, there will be opportunity for you to participate in the discussion as well. Tickets are $20, and for that you get live jazz, a live podcast taping, complimentary beer and champagne, a chance to view some art, and $10 off at local area restaurant LIC. So at the end of the day, it feels like you're really only paying $10 for the event. So just in time for Valentine's Day, join Page 4 as we look at partnerships in life and love. You never know, you might just find your partner at our event.
Hello and welcome to Page 4 Entertainment. I am Jennifer Faulkner, joined with Anthony C.K. Hello.
Hey, Jen.
How are you today?
Good, good.
This is the special Insomnia Flu edition.
Yeah, we're all a little bit tired and all a little bit sick.
So we are coping with a little bubbly.
We have a special announcement. Scott Palmer, who you know from our weekly review podcast on pagefarmmusic.com, and one of the hosts of the dating podcast, has become especially busy with work lately, so he's going to have to back out of the dating podcast. We'll still be doing our weekly review every Thursday on Page 4 Music. Yeah, but the dating one will now be hosted by me and Jen.
Hello. But he might come in and visit from time to time.
Yeah, he'll be our special guest.
Give us his 2 cents. Yeah. We are joined today with my friend and ex-coworker, Maggie.
Hello.
Maggie Esposito.
Maggie Esposito, that's my name.
She, we have worked in a bar / restaurant together, so I wanted her to come on for today's podcast, which is about establishing boundaries in the early points of a relationship, be that romantic or professional, or perhaps in a situation where you hope it is romantic,
and
perhaps
professional.
The other and professional.
Well,
perhaps the other
both.
Person does not want it to be romantic. So those initial meetings of trying to work out how your relationship is going to be can sometimes be bumpy.
Yeah, and what we mean by boundaries too are things like touching, joking, things that aren't necessarily established and early in the relationship, because everyone we meet is going to be different. There's a great scene in Boogie Nights where Mark Wahlberg's character, Dirk Diggler, meets John C. Reilly's character. I can't think of his name. But they go on, and at first it's a little bit confrontational, you know, because they're both these male porn stars. They're kind of the alpha male type A porn stars. But then they start talking about weightlifting, and instantly it's a fast friendship. And so on the one hand you have that, but then on the other hand you have two people who meet, and maybe you don't have this instant connection, and so you're kind of trying to fight through the wall of boundaries to figure out what's acceptable and what's not.
Now, this podcast was kind of inspired by my recent work experience. I have a coworker that, you know, really wants to set up an extracurricular friendship with me. He's been, like, trying to hang out, trying to hit on me at work. And I have a relationship with some of my other coworkers. We're flirty. We hang out. This particular guy, he does not... I'd say turn my crank, but he doesn't do that at all. But even his presence can almost get a little exhausting or offensive because he tries too hard. So instead of where he's genuinely trying to make a connection, it's making me push farther and farther away. And Maggie, you've, I think, experienced situations like this where someone really wants to be your friend or really wants to, like, hang out with you, you know, maybe hit on you. And it's establishing that, like, you want to be nice to people, you want to be friendly with people, but you don't, you know, necessarily want them to hug you or want them to touch you in any way.
Touch you, pinch you, caress your arm as they walk by. Like, some people don't.
Yeah, a lot of people do that.
Mess up your hair. Can I just set that boundary now? Don't mess up a girl's hair. It's not cute.
I don't like anyone touching my, like, I don't like my girlfriend touching my hair. I don't like anyone. My mom touches my hair and drives me insane. Whenever I see her, she'll make a point to walk up behind me and mess my hair up.
Yeah.
She drives me crazy.
If we're naked and, you know, in a bed, you can touch run your hand through my hair all you want. But if I'm at work and you ruffle something that I have tried to, like, make coiffed for a professional night at the bar, it's not going to get the reaction that you were hoping for.
Even if it looks like I just threw my hair up and I'm at work.
That bedhead takes work.
Don't even think about it. Don't go near me or my hair.
So in that sense, what I'm talking about with this gentleman, those early stages and setting those boundaries can kind of be the same for a professional relationship or a dating one. I, like, my situation, I bartend, so the line can be fuzzy quite often. And like I was telling Anthony earlier, it's not something you would ever complain about sexual harassment. And I have said before on the podcast, I believe in flirting with everybody and making everyone feel good about themselves. There's a difference between trying to make someone feel good about themselves and just blatantly hitting on them in an exhausting way.
Well, there's that old line from, I think it's from The Tonight Show, they would tell people, you can't swear and you can't take it out. And that was their rules for what you could do when you were on air.
The words to live by.
But since this is a podcast, you could take it out if you want.
Well, it might make me lose my train of yeah. thought. if you whip out random appendages.
Yeah. I'm not gonna do that.
So we were talking before off the air about you know, if you're trying to set up a relationship with someone and the tactic you're using isn't working, you have two options. You can either change your tactic, you know, adapt to possibly communicate more effectively with this person, or you could do what this particular person at my work is doing, which is use the same tactic harder and more often. Which I have not found effective. It has made me like him less and less as a person.
I just think in general, even if you're at the supermarket and you're at a checkout counter and you're trying to, like, make a joke with a person and they're clearly not responding in the way that you want, I just think it's common sense to understand that. Like, acknowledge it, not working, move on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's a perfect example of that that was taken from our earlier hell that was being stuck between... Jen and I were in the car today, stuck behind a truck that was loading something up, and behind us was another truck. And we were just stuck in the middle of the road for probably a half hour, and the guy behind us laid on the horn probably 28 of those minutes. And at some point you're like, you know, this is clearly not going to elicit the reaction you want, and holding it down is only making everyone more uncomfortable and more tense. And if you take that to a professional realm or to a dating realm, if I'm hitting on someone or someone is hitting on someone else, and the party involved, the hittee, is not comfortable, then there's nothing the hitter can do to make them more comfortable, with the exception of backing off or changing a tactic in some way.
Yeah, like we had mentioned that if that semi behind us had backed up and moved over, everyone else could have backed up down the street and gotten around. Instead, we were stuck for a solid 15 minutes behind this truck listening to someone lay on their horn directly behind us.
I'm so glad you made that reference, because the feeling you get when somebody is honking their horn when it's not purposeful is exactly the feeling I get when some guy or some customer of any sort is just, like, crossing a boundary.
Yeah.
It's that annoying where nobody can hear you if you tell them to stop, because it's like you have that line of, like, I have to be professional. I cannot offend this person. I don't want to drive their business away.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd rather pull my eyeballs out than listen to them.
And when I hear loud noises blasting in my ear, it gives me a slight nausea, and it is kind of the same
right?
feeling. You know,
I knew
you
there
mentioned...
was a reason we had to sit in that car for a half hour.
You mentioned the joke in the supermarket line. Like, that's something that has happened to me with this guy, where he will give very adolescent jokes. You know when someone gives a joke and it tells you it's funny?
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't find it funny. For instance, and Anthony actually brought this up earlier, and I wrote it down that because I'm a vegetarian, he said, you know, that joke people give to vegetarians or vegans, do vegans swallow?
Sorry. Clearly not a vegetarian or a vegan.
But it's, again, like knowing your audience. If you're saying that as a pickup line to a vegetarian,
yeah.
You know, one, you're being, you know, overtly sexual, and then you're insisting that they go along with this. Mm-hmm. You know, in the right group.
And it's all the context, too. Like, if it's within a flirty relationship and you've already crossed those sexual boundaries, maybe it's not meant to be funny, but you're just using it as a suggestive line. But if it's a cold call, like if that's how I'm initiating a conversation with you, it's totally the wrong move to go with. There's no poise I can say it with which you're going to not be off put.
Right. Or especially like I have certain friends that I can joke, you know, sexually about, mm-hmm. it's fine. But if you're constantly making this person uncomfortable, you know, he had said to me, you know, hey, do you teach yoga? And I said, no, you know, not at all. Why are you looking for a good class? And he said, no, I'm looking for a private lesson. Now, I was cleaning out a fridge at work. I'm, you know, squatted down with my flashlight out, scrubbing the bottom of a fridge. And this is someone I've never expressed any sexual interest in. So what am I supposed to do with that?
You know, there's some fridges at the Page for Entertainment, Page for Music household that could need some cleaning if you were so inclined.
Give me some money, I'll clean your fridge. But you guys know.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot you can do in that situation.
And then when I didn't laugh, or when I just gave like an obviously fake laugh, that would maybe be a sign to change your tactic, that I don't want to be in that kind of flirty relationship with him. Instead, it has come on harder and harder, where now he has said, like, you know, you don't have a sense of humor. He's put it on me that I'm not funny, I'm not fun, I don't have a sense of humor. And I have no recourse then but to answer back, no, I do have a sense of humor, you're not funny.
Yeah.
That's the hardest thing for people to accept. I think it's difficult to, for someone who works in a service industry type situation, that person you work with isn't a guest at the bar. So you can almost, like, you want to be polite and you don't want to offend somebody. But I think that I've learned throughout the years, like, people that are coworkers that cross those boundaries, I used to have big issues with it. I used to not know how to deal with it. And now I'm just like, I'm never going to sleep with you. That's my comeback. Mm-hmm. I know you're hitting at me. I know you're trying to, like, make little innuendos. And my response is, I'm never going to sleep with you. And they don't even know what to do with that. It might be rude. It might make them hate you. But
they're already making you hate them by coming on too strong. Or you could say, like, at this point, the most you could hope for is my friendship. And right now you are, that's pushing it.
But he probably doesn't want to be your friend. He just wants to sleep with you.
That's true. And I don't really want to be his friend either.
Yeah.
You could even erase that, really. I don't, you know.
Should we go through this kind of edits on the... one thing I think it's interesting you guys are touching on is there's a popular style now that's arisen over the last few years with what male dating coaches and these dating experts are putting out there, and it's to rag on or to tease a girl. And while if you're doing it well and you're doing it good natured, and you can tell that the other person is really teasing you and not being an asshole, then it works, you know, and it can be flirtatious, but the line you have to skirt is that line of flirtatious, like we're talking earlier with the do vegan swallow comment. Like, obviously that plays in certain situations, but there are a lot of situations where that's just wildly inappropriate. And the thing that these male dating experts, when I say male dating experts, I'm talking about specifically their dating experts with materials geared for men. Now, they talk about, like, doing these... I think the term one of them throws out is negging, where you...
negging?
Negging, like negative comments that are designed not to be mean, but to be little barbs to get a woman outside of her comfort zone. And the idea behind that is not entirely flawed, but it is on some level if it's not executed correctly.
As a woman, I would never want somebody to intentionally try to put me outside of my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Like... if you're like, it's one thing if it's like a casual encounter and the two sort of understand that, but like if somebody's trying to date me, Why would you want to make me feel?
Well, they're not. It's not at like we've not gotten that far. If that's what's going on, it's at the initial reaction point. Almost like if we walk up to one another on the street, and if we we're going to walk by one another without looking at each other. If it's in New York, so this is a way of calling out the person's attention and making yourself in some way an outlier in terms of interaction.
Okay. You know, I'll say my good friends, male and female, I think, challenge me. Mm-hmm. And will, I hope, point out things, like, negative aspects of myself that maybe need to be, like, worked on a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm working very hard on myself to be a good person, mm-hmm. to be a good active member of society. And, you know, if I'm wearing something that I just look ridiculous in, I hope someone would tell me.
Yeah.
However, these are, like, my friends, people that I have established a relationship with who know that I want nothing more than for them to feel good about themselves and vice versa.
Well, it's one thing for me to say, hey, your shirt looks silly. It's an entirely different prospect for me to come up to you and say, if I don't know you, say, hey, that shirt sucks. You look like an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's not what they're getting at with these dating experts, but that's how a lot of guys interpret it, because either they're not funny or they just misinterpret what you're supposed to do.
And that happened to me once, you know, at school. I got to class early, and there was a guy from another class I didn't know. And the way he tried to engage with me was to basically put down everything I was doing. You know, he started by ragging on the fact that I was using a Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, you know, when you are in school, your professors post a lot of PDFs. So instead of printing out all this paper and lugging it around, then I can just put it all on my Kindle. Ragged on the book I was reading. And then, as, like, my eyes started to glaze over, I was trying to figure out how to disengage with this person because I had never wanted to talk with him in the first place. I was there to do some reading.
Mm-hmm.
He looks at me and says, you have very judgmental eyes.
And so she looks back at me and she's like, and you look like you have a small penis. That wasn't
and
really
that
me.
That
was
be direct.
That was, yes, I have judgmental eyes because I am judging you and I think you're an asshole.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I think people need to know when to quit in a lot of cases. And that's such an issue.
Yeah. I have an example of someone who courted me
mm-hmm.
by using that, like, third grade, I'm going to tease this girl till she wants to cry. And it actually worked.
And did you cry?
I didn't cry. I married this person.
Oh.
But when we first met, and we're soon to be not married, but that's, like, a whole nother issue. But when when we first met, he was a little standoffish.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not attracted to him at first. We worked together. I didn't even know he spoke English, frankly. I wasn't sure until we spoke because he was very quiet. And he was always very, I don't know, he just always had this look on his face that he was, like, angry about something. And then slowly, you know, you become friends with people at work and other people are friends, start hanging out. And he was always a little mean to me, but, like, it never bothered me because I wasn't really into him until one of my friends was like, I think he likes you. And I was like, that's absurd. Like, he's making fun of me. And they're like,
mm-hmm.
no, it's like that little elementary school, like,
he's like
I'm
pulling your pigtails.
Tug her hair. Yeah. And he said to me, you're not hot. You're just cute. Or something like that. I don't remember the exact line. But for some
wow.
reason, that line was like, damn, I'm going to prove him wrong. You know what I mean? Like, when it's at the
mm-hmm.
right moment,
mm-hmm.
something really offensive could not be so offensive.
Yeah, and I think if you've built up to that point, it's totally acceptable, but if you're coming out of the gate by being a dick, it's
now,
not.
Now, if you hadn't reacted that way, and you had been like, all right, F you, would he have just left it at that? Like, he wasn't actively hitting on you.
He wasn't actively hitting on me, but the only nice thing he ever did was he kept saying, when are we going to hang out? When are we going to hang out? And I was like, why would I hang out with you?
I hate it when guys say that. I'm
why
like, when you take my number. And
yeah, I'm like, never. He's like, when are we going to hang out? What are we going to do tonight? I'm like, you're going home to your place, and I'm going home to my place, and the two shall never meet. And so he was asking me out, but the tugging hair thing would happen in completely different settings. And I was just utterly confused. I was 19 years old, and, like, this grumpy, you know, grumpy dude was, like, being mean to me all the time and then asking me out. And I had a friend, like, throw it in my face. Like, he likes you. He's trying to, like, get your attention.
Mm-hmm.
And then that turned into me subconsciously always thinking that he liked me. And then I sort of understood those little pokey things. Because he wasn't just, like a happy-go-lucky person. So that's how he conversed with people.
Now, you mentioned that you will soon not be married. Do you think that as you eventually venture out into the dating world again, that that tactic will work on you again?
Never. Been there, done that. I don't regret it. It was fun while it lasted, but I'm looking for somebody who's not so, so coarse.
I wonder, for people, I know a number of people who have really kind of glommed on to this technique in terms of approaching women. There are so many different ways you can meet people today, and that's just one technique people use. And for people who are kind of stuck in that rut, how to break from that mold, you know? How to get back into a mold, not where you're I mean, maybe you're really refining it so that you are just flirting and you're not being a jerk.
Mm. You know, I think part of it, too, I said that I always like people to feel good about themselves. Mm-hmm. However, this same gentleman I've mentioned compliments all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think a big important thing is to make sure those compliments are genuine.
Yeah.
And you want to give them out like candy. No one can eat too much candy at once. They'll get sick.
Or fat.
Or fat. Sick and fat. And sick of being fat.
Yeah, so no one's going to want to date you then.
So I think that's something to keep in mind is, like, actually monitor that person's, you know, like, in this case with this person, he would get such a better response from me if he would, like, make my work life easier instead of just trying to, like, pressure me into flirting with him and that, like, give me a hug that forced interaction where they're trying to engage in, like, physical mm-hmm. contact, that I'm not to that point with him yet, and I don't want to hurt his feelings, but I also don't want his arms wrapped around me. His smell does not do it for me. He's, you know, I'm not that good of a friend with him.
You said yet. I don't think it'll ever be there.
Well, with this particular case, no. Had he handled the situation differently, I could have maybe been a more flirty coworker with mm-hmm. him, had fun, if he had, you know, gotten the message.
Yeah.
And maybe, and that's, I think, part of why I brought up this podcast, is I'd like to learn I don't want to be rude, I don't want to shoot someone's self-esteem down, but at the same time, I don't want to engage in contact or physical contact that I don't feel comfortable with.
Let's just put it out there, physically speaking, unless you know the person well, and this is one thing, musicians do this a lot, the hugging. I've been hugged by musicians, women musicians, men musicians, who I've become good friends with really early in the relationship because we just played a good set together. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it feels right, sometimes it doesn't. And hugging, touching, all of that. The difficulty with physical contact, I guess, is understanding when it's right, especially if it's non-sexual. If it's sexual physical contact, that spark is going to be there. But if it's mm-hmm. non-sexual physical contact, like, is it okay to just put your hand on someone's back?
I, you know, I'll start with a kiss on the cheek mm-hmm. or both cheeks. You know, this is funny because when we've worked together before and one of us is visibly upset, you mm-hmm. know, sometimes, like you've said to me, do you need a hug?
Yeah.
And sometimes I don't want to be touched, you know, and I think that's happened with you as well. We were like, no, I just need to, like, people to not look at me right now and not give me attention so I can get it together. But that's also, we're two women and that's more of a friendship situation, whereas if you have a man that you haven't given any indication that you want to, like, be more physically intimate with, to have them say, like, give me a hug.
Yeah, it's just off-putting. It's because it's so far out of the context of your established relationship and out of your established, the way that you guys interact with one another, because you never hug. Mm-hmm. You never just say, I mean, it's one thing if it's like your brother and you hug all the time, but it's an entirely different prospect if it's just a guy who is, especially in your case, or your case, Maggie, a customer at your bar. That's just so foreign to your normal interactions.
And there's also the difference between, like, you and I having a work relationship and a friendship and saying, do you need a hug because I'm caring because you're upset? Because, like, we actually have had those hug moments mm-hmm. where we're like, yeah, we could use a hug. But, like, there's a difference between, do you need a hug?
And I'm not going to smell your hair.
Yeah. Do you need a hug? That's the worst. Oh, guys, dude, that's a boundary issue. Guys do that. But there's a difference between, like, a friendship and saying, do you need a hug because you want to somehow help that person, you don't know how else to do it, and some random guy that you only know because you happen to coincidentally work in the same place, and him to demand a hug, give mm-hmm. me a hug. Like,
yeah. But it's one thing to ask someone for a hug if it's an empty hug. Like, you're having a rough day. Oh, you want a hug?
Right.
And, like, you're obviously going to turn it down, and if you were to say, yes, give me a hug, I would say, I was not really being serious.
Yeah. It's just when you don't have physical chemistry. Yeah. You know, I have physical chemistry with people that I don't sleep with. Mm-hmm. There's another coworker at this same place. We flirt like crazy. I'm sure people think that we are screwing down in the walk-in mm-hmm. fridge.
Which would be super hot.
Would be super hot. We're not. I don't care. This other person's trying to establish that same relationship, but it's not there. And part of it is just physical chemistry. This guy that I don't engage with well, he's a big guy, which I'm not into, and I don't mean fat, I mean like he's a broad guy, which yeah. some girls love, that doesn't turn my crank. At the end of a shift, when you're sweaty and, you know, you've been working all night, I don't want your smell all over me.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You know, one thing I think that you said that's interesting about establishing physical boundaries. I don't have any peripheral vision. When I walk down a hallway or walk along a wall, I oftentimes put my hand out so I can feel the wall, so I don't run into it because I can't see where it is. And I've often, if I'm walking with someone just so I can get a physical sense of where they are, I will brush up against them. And I'm not doing it in any way where I want to elicit sexual contact or elicit any contact other than I don't know where you are, and going like that is relatively painless. You're not going to, I bumped Maggie on the arm. You're not going to complain about it. I'm not going to complain about it, but it's going to give me some spatial sense as to where you are.
Right.
Now that has led me down the road of being in the uncomfortable situation where because I bumped Maggie, then she thinks I'm flirting with her, and she starts bumping me back, and I don't want that.
And then you're just shoving each other yeah. down the hallway, and it's so rude.
You know, you bumped into me, and I never put two and two together. You've mentioned that you don't have peripheral vision mm-hmm. before, but
sometimes because I don't see you.
We've been walking next to
you
each
know?
Other and, like, slam next to into each other and bounce yeah. off, and I'm like, that was awkward.
Well, yeah, and a lot of times I don't mean to do it.
Yeah, I remember why.
I don't see you.
That's similar to a work situation where we've both worked in places that are very tight quarters before, and sometimes to get around, you have to touch people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's touching an arm or touching a back. Like, I think before I was trying to get around you and I
yeah.
might have put my hand on your back and, like, I'm pretty sure you didn't get a flirt vibe.
Yeah.
But that's sometimes what people have to do. But there's sometimes where people don't understand that boundary of, like, I'm only touching you because I need to get by
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm only touching you because I need to know, like, where both of our feet are so we
yeah.
don't crash into each other.
I've played many close quarters jazz gigs where you have to walk behind a bass player because, I mean, the bass is always the big instrument because the guy's standing there and it protrudes 2 feet from his body. And to get around the guy or to stand next to the guy, or if a guy's taking a solo and is kind of backing into you, you just put your hand up so he can feel your hand on his back. And all of that is fine until then, after that, you've established this physical boundary. Now the guy can come and put his arm around you. And it's not even sexual. It's just, okay, we've established now we can touch
each
other.
We can touch
each
other, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of the best compliments I ever got was at a different restaurant I worked
mm-hmm.
at. It was super busy. It sat 400 people.
Mm-hmm.
You had a huge clientele and a huge staff. And a coworker gave me a very nice compliment. He said, you know, your touch is always very
mm-hmm.
kind. And I'll always just do a flat hand, like on the back, maybe small of the back or the shoulder, just like, hey, I'm back here. If I can't necessarily say behind you, I would say behind you incessantly when
yeah.
I'm at work. I've worked
with people know where you are.
I've worked with people in the past, and I'm doing a small example to Maggie right now, where they will do the 2-finger poke
Ugh.
In my ribs,
mm-hmm.
small of my back, or smack me.
Honking a horn incessantly.
Yes, I'm always like, what the fuck's your fucking problem?
I'm not going to lie, I do that to people when I'm annoyed at them,
mm-hmm.
because I know that it feels gross. So, like, if somebody, because I'm in a management position where I work,
mm-hmm.
and I'm also a very nice, easygoing person, and, like, it takes a lot for me to, like, get bitchy. But there's this one person at work who does do a little flirty touching, and I'm just like, I'm never going to sleep with you, for multiple reasons. But I also need to tell these people what to do, and when I tell this person what to do, and this person doesn't listen, if this person is in the way, Like, I've done the, excuse me, I've done the need to get by behind you, the whole, like, lingo you gotta go through.
You just wanna avoid the situation.
So sometimes I just jab them, because you gotta get the F out of my way, and, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But that is the most annoying way you could possibly touch somebody, is to poke them.
And you're stating it, like, the boundary you're setting is, I am pissed off at you right now, get the frack out of my way.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about it in a professional setting. Let's talk about it a little bit in a dating setting.
Okay.
I wanted to mention one other thing that can kind of segue into it, because
mm-hmm.
they go together, and that's establishing the boundary or being aware of your own boundary of dumping too much information on a person at one
mm-hmm.
time. And I had a customer at an old place, and Maggie might remember this woman, who, you know, when things weren't great in her own life, she'd come and sit at the bar by herself, and she was nice. I would like her. I liked her face. I remembered her drink. It was fine. Until she would start suggesting ways to fix everything. How the cocktails should be. How our menu should be. How our seating should be. How our lighting should be. And then she would go into my own life and how to fix my career. You know, and that's something to remember when you're on the other side of the bar or when you're working with someone. And then when you're on a first date with someone, like, dumping too much information on a person can really make them go from, you know, liking you to disliking you in 0 to 60.
Yeah.
There's a great thing they always tell young saxophone students, and it is, don't play everything you know in one solo. And, I mean,
perfect.
But seriously, we laugh.
That's great advice.
But it's really the epitome of a young saxophone player, because when you're playing these auditions for high school big bands and for college big bands, you need to show on some level that you are totally confident in playing certain musical idioms and certain cliches within your playing. And if I got up and played now the way I played, or played then the way I play now, I would oftentimes play a lot more subtly, and it might not win me a big band audition, or it might not win me a spot I'm going for in a jazz combo. But because I'm doing it now, and I'm really just kind of laying back and putting the simple melody out there, it's going to sound much better, but it's not going to have the same technical ferocity. To take that into a dating realm, if I'm flirting with you, and I'm using every single technique I know at once, it's really going to be a little oppressive and a little bit difficult to deal with and process for you, because if I am throwing out these great cliche, you know, like one-liners that I've come up with or that I've learned by studying books and all of this eye contact thing and the physical touching thing, it's going to be sensory overload.
True.
It's kind of like, not that she ever became that musically fantastic, but when Christina Aguilera first came on the scene, we don't need to hear every note you can sing in every song.
Yeah.
Because if you give somebody a little bit of something, you can naturally see if they want more.
Yeah.
And then when the time arises, you give them more. But if you give them everything at once and none of those shots are working, it's like, on to the next one.
Well, and we were talking earlier about, if you're good at something and you succeed at things in life, if you're a perpetually successful person in 90% of what you do, you have no reason to think your techniques aren't working. Now, I'm a saxophonist. I consider myself to be a good saxophonist. I can barely read music because I don't have peripheral vision. I'm physically unable to look ahead in certain pieces of music. And so it's problematic. I've had to find ways to deal with that. And I've dealt with it by getting really good at memorizing music very quickly, so that if I have a difficult passage that I just physically am unable to look ahead with, I'm able to process it and internalize it relatively quickly. And because of that, rather because I've identified that, I'm now able to cope with it. But if you have these weaknesses in your quote-unquote game or your the way you're interacting with people as you date them, you have to identify them.
You know, we did the OK Cupid episode, and I think that's a great way to practice changing your tactics, seeing what works, seeing what gets a positive response.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's so many people, you can try something and see how they react if you're self-aware enough to, you know that you might have to change your tactic.
Well,
and
I think one thing to remember, too, is people aren't always going to be your, like, just because we go out on a date doesn't mean you're going to be my soulmate.
Well, but also, like, when you're doing something like that and you're looking for things you have in common, like, maybe we'll want to hang out because you like walking in the park, and I like walking in the park, and you like crepes, and I like crepes.
I love crepes. We should date, Jennifer.
Do you like walking in the park?
I love walking in the park.
There you go.
While eating crepes.
I'll keep that in mind. But if you bombard someone with everything about yourself, one, you're going to come off as a braggart.
Or crazy.
Or crazy.
Especially if it's really crazy stuff. You know, like if it's, so I had a bad day and now verbal diarrhea ensues for the next 20 minutes. You're going to come off as a nut job.
Right.
Because I don't want your bad day to like make my
day bad.
Like, why would you want to bring anybody else into that?
I think a big thing there is being self-aware enough to, like, notice if your tactic isn't working and change. Like, this guy at work, if he changed his tactic, it might be more effective. I can get that verbal diarrhea habit, and it's something that, like, I had to look at myself. People really don't like when I do this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it, you can never change overnight, but I think with a lot of self-reflection and self-work, it's like building anything.
I practice the saxophone for a couple hours each day, regardless of what day it is or when my next gig is or what the next time I'm going to be even playing with another person is. If it were my last day on Earth, I'd still get up and I'd play the horn for 2 hours that day because it's something I've worked into my system. Now, that means I've put in so many hours on just the ins and outs of the saxophone. People don't do that with dating, and I think what the mistake people make is, if I'm going on a date with Maggie, I'm looking for her to be my soulmate that instant. And because of that, I mean, let's look at the statistics. If 50% of the people out there are getting divorced...
I think it's more than 50 now.
Yeah, if it's like...
In my own family, it's 3 out of 4 children.
Yeah. I mean, that's an incredibly high percentage. Chances are the person you are going to have coffee with tomorrow
is
not
going
your,
to be your future
soulmate.
Ex-spouse.
Yeah.
There's a beautiful wine bar in our neighborhood, and I frequent it. The bartender there is fantastic at disengaging from people. I'd be interested to hear your opinions on this, because sometimes he's too effective, or it can put someone down a little too harshly. However, he is good at basically giving people that lesson that I will only give you a little bit of myself at a time.
Mm-hmm. And to give him a little plug, he really is a very good... wine collector. What's
he
the term?
He's a sommelier.
You know, but he will, you know, once you get too pushy too. Now, he can be a little, you know, too intense. There are times, like, when I first met him, I'd be, say, how was your day?
Mm-hmm.
Say, why do you ask?
I'm not gonna lie, when I first met him, I was like, whoa, simmer down there, buddy.
But, you know, it is a great lesson, and he keeps people coming back because he'll only give so much of himself at a time. Now, this same bar, it's also a great pickup spot, and I've been flirted with there, I've been flirted with badly there, I have tried to flirt there, I have watched people flirt there. I guess a big lesson from that place is, one, seeing the indications that someone wants to engage in conversation with you. You know, they look at you, they make eye contact, if it's a girl or a guy, I guess, they touch their hair, you know, keep peeking back. But also, when it's time to disengage, I had this experience with a gentleman who, you know, came up, talked, it was nice, we were talking a little bit, but then he proceeded to brag about his entire life story for 20 minutes, and there was no way to disengage with him. And my poor friend was having to, like, make small talk with the person next to her because I couldn't get out of this conversation. And while usually I'm pretty good about being like, you know, it was very nice to see you, but I'm speaking to someone... Sometimes people won't give you that out.
Well, you know, one thing a lot of these dating techniques that I was talking about earlier do really stress, and this is, again, to their credit, is the idea that really what you're doing with that initial reaction, rather the initial interaction with a potential sexual partner, is engaging them on a few different levels. Obviously, the visual level, potentially the physical level with some cursory touching, maybe a handshake, maybe a hug, probably not, though, but very much so on an intellectual level. So you're pulling them in for 4 or 5 minutes at a time and then exiting so that you get all of the necessary interactions. One, I know who you are. Two, I know that you are in some way sexually attracted to me or sexually interested in me. And three, we have now exchanged means by which we can stay in communication, and then we can go back to our respective nights and not rely on each other for entertainment, because I came to this bar with my friends, and you came to the bar with your friends to to do very purposeful activities, and by going, returning to those activities, we've established, yes, that we're able to coexist separately from one another.
And sparked a little anticipation without, you know, killing everything in one shot.
Mm-hmm.
I think also there's a lot to say for the touch on the arm when you're trying to engage physical contact.
Mm-hmm.
I think both as the touchy and the toucher, there's so much energy that can get passed where someone, as like the toucher, it can feel sometimes forced. And
mm-hmm.
if that touch on the arm feels forced, a hug is definitely going to be forced.
And Jen's touching Maggie's arm right now.
I am.
And I liked it. Mm-hmm. Maggie liked it.
But we have already established that.
So you guys are going to start dating then?
Possibly soon.
Possibly. At least a platonic relationship.
But it's true with that touch. I mean, whether it's a work situation, dating situation, whatever situation, like the touch is like, if it naturally happens, it naturally happens. If it doesn't, that just could be a sign that like, all right, this person's kind of a waste of my dating time.
Or that you're in a situation where it's, I mean, there's been plenty of situations where, like, if the table is a little too wide, it becomes uncomfortable to...
where someone's, like, reaching over
yeah.
the table hoping to get touched, and then you just look like you're trying to dive into a pool.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of tables. If you're a small person or you're a large person, like, if you're taller than 6 feet tall or you're 5 feet tall, where the simple logistics of size relationships
you're
aren't
giant.
Going to match.
What are you touching me with?
Yeah.
It's like that cake song where he laments about how every car should be a, how all bucket seats have to go. I have a very good friend, a girlfriend, who isn't always comfortable with physical contact. And
mm-hmm.
we've been friends for a few years now, and she's, I'd say, one of my closest girlfriends. But there are times where I'll just, like, touch her shoulder, and I know it's not that a hug would be forced.
Yeah.
And it's not something where she likes me any less. It's just that she has these boundaries that she's still... working with, and sometimes we hug and it's totally needed and it's totally fine, but sometimes she's not in a place where she feels like she can take a hug. She also has a very draining job where she's dealing with people's, you know, negative energy all day long. So that's something that, as being her friend, I've had to learn not to take it too personally and not to get my feelings hurt, that she doesn't necessarily want me to hug her.
Well, like Scott and I, my former co-host and the current of the Thursday afternoon weekly review that you can tune into on pagefourmusic.com. We've known each other for like almost 18 years, and I think we do the head nod to greet each other. We'll shake hands, but we rarely hug. And then there are guys I've been friends with that's just their purview, that they will hug you and go in for some sort of a overly elaborate handshaking gesture that involves hugging in three different ways and slapping each other on the butt and
you know
I mean, there's like a whole
though,
what's
when,
that
when you've never had that contact
mm-hmm.
with somebody but you automatically like get
yeah.
the right combo
yeah that's
oh
a,
well that's the connection
I know,
I mean,
I know.
Then, there you go
hug slap pound tap your tush
mm-hmm.
roundabout
turn around
and
you little flip the shoulder bump,
leg.
The elbow bump. There's a lot of different moves you can do.
It was funny. The day after I suggested this topic to Anthony, I happened to be in a little cafe where The Onion was sitting out. In case you've been living in a cave for 50 years, The Onion is a great fake news source. Where,
yeah, it's
with,
fun. They lampoon real news.
Yeah, they have their social commentary about what's happening in the world. And the article said 89% of networking non-consensual. And it's talking about how at work parties or after, you know, after work.
It's like essentially like if you're with your if you go on a drink, you know, like let's say we go out for a drink, and then suddenly I start throwing my resume out at you
because
and,
you want a promotion.
Yeah, exactly.
It says this study determined that 89% of networking encounters occur forcibly and without the consent of one of the parties involved, a disturbing finding that suggests far more people are victims of unwanted career-related discussions than was previously thought. And there's a great quote they have here, which, you know, I think can lead into a dating conversation. It says, "It's not uncommon for people who have been brutally networked to blame themselves for what was done to them. They might, for example, believe that their business casual attire provoked the networker, or that standing alone in the corner of a cocktail party was somehow asking for it."
seen that so many times. Like, because I work in the service industry, but I also have worked in creepy corporate settings, and I have a real estate license, and there's different networking events. And the concept of networking is great because it's how you market yourself. Mm-hmm. It's the cheapest way. You can make business cards for free or really inexpensive and just pass them out to everybody. And it's a similar way of dating. Like, it doesn't mean everybody needs your business card. Yeah, you don't want everybody's business card. But, you know, it's very easy to, like, not see the boundary of, like, when it's appropriate to, like, hand someone your information. And just the same way, it's, you know, working in a bar, there are certain people that ask for my contact information. And there are people that I don't mind giving it
and
to.
And when you say they ask for it, do you mean in a, like, let's hang
can
out?
Can I have your number? Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of times it's like, can I have your number? Or usually when it's okay and I feel comfortable, it's like, because we've discussed, you know, there's a girl that comes into where I work and we decided we want to go to yoga together. So we exchanged contact information. We were already Facebook friends and blah, blah, blah. And that's cool. And then there was a man at the bar that saw that exchange and was like, well, I don't have your number yet. Give me your number.
And that was actually something I'd wanted to bring up.
Like the pin number piggybacking?
There are certain people that I have met at the bar that I was like, I'd totally, like, grab a cocktail with you, mm-hmm. or grab coffee, be it a man or a woman. And there are some that it is that I don't, you know? I don't want to be your friend. And that's a really difficult thing to navigate because you always have to do it graciously.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But sometimes people will put you in an awkward situation. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, why don't I have your number yet? Well, because I felt no reason to give it to you.
Well, you know, and it's interesting too. I've been in a situation where I worked at this day job for a couple of years with a normal 9-to-5 thing, and it was a pretty standard office space situation. You would interact with your coworkers on a cursory level, and you weren't, I was not really particularly close with any of them beyond the office setting. And I don't think I really knew the personal details of most of them. I mean, I was kind of friends with a few, but not really, more so than just seeing them every day. It's like school, you know, you don't necessarily know everyone in mm-hmm. your third grade class, but you know their face. One day I ran into one of them outside of a non-work related event. We had a couple of drinks together and got on famously, and it was kind of like, oh, we could actually be friends in a non-work related situation if need be, you know? And the way that arises just sometimes never happens, and sometimes it does.
Mm-hmm. And I think the line of when it's appropriate or not, like working in an office in a corporate situation, mm-hmm. there's so many things that you just can't do because it's inappropriate, and human resources will probably send you.
Yeah, like you can't do the arm touch.
You can't do an arm touch, which, in my opinion, is a little strange, like, because mm-hmm. touching and, like, communicate, mm-hmm. you know, like, that's how, which is probably why I never step with corporate situations. But there's a difference, and, like, hopefully this will get into dating because we keep going back to, like, a work situation. But when you're the server and there's somebody who's your guest, like, you're sort of paid to make that person think that you're in love with them. Like, you're mm-hmm. supposed to make, not that extreme, but, like, you're just, that's how I go. Like, I go in with a smile, and everybody's great.
And even in
cool.
a corporate environment, I mean, on some level, if you're dealing with clients or if you're dealing with visitors to an office, you have to make them feel as though they are incredibly important,
yeah.
regardless of whether or not they have anything to do with your day-to-day. I mean, if someone is taking a guest around the office and introducing them to you, your job is to come off as the proprietor and really make a great name for yourself and for your company as this figurehead, regardless of whether it's a one-on-one interaction or a one-on-five interaction, and regardless of whether you're the only person they're dealing with in the whole office, or if your boss is taking his family around to everyone in the office, you still have to approach them on that, I represent you, the corporate organization.
And as a, like, working in a restaurant, I think it's not so much making someone feel like they're, or making someone feel like you're in love with them, but you're that perfect hostess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're serving them food, you're serving them alcohol, you're making sure all their needs are met and they're comfortable. You're almost like that housewife of your neighbor or your mm-hmm. friend that everybody wants to get
a
hold of.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're that housewife that they want to sleep with.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I'm at work. I'm working right now.
And I think part of the corporate problem, like, with the sexual harassment is, and I will even venture so far to say it's kind of an American thing or mm-hmm. Obsession, you know, with corporations and being proper, is someone not finding those proper words to say, to set those boundaries and set those space, which is almost the same thing as dating. You know, you need these rules, you need this manager to say, you can't touch her arm, that's inappropriate, instead of someone saying, you know.
Yeah, instead of me saying, hey, you know, I'm trying to work right now, let me mm-hmm. do this. One thing I've noticed, and this pops out in the music realm, because we have these things called jam sessions, wherein a bunch of musicians will get together and essentially just improvise music, and you learn real quickly how to interact with people on a non-verbal level. And the thing that pops out with that is oftentimes people's personalities will take over, and if you have like a really dominant personality, they'll end up playing a lot more than someone else. And so you kind of have to check your ego a lot of times and keep the mind that we're still creating something musically for an audience. Mm-hmm. And even in a non-jam session setting, a normal session setting where you're a soloist, you still have to keep the audience's perspective in mind, that you're there on some level to entertain them, and that you have this unwritten social contract that you are providing them with a service, that being your entertainment, and they are providing you with a service, that being either paying the bar or buying a ticket price. And in the dating realm, the social contract says, if you and I go out on a date, we are providing each other with a social services for exchange of goods.
I think a lot of it is just looking at the other person, the other people that are in the world, in that environment at that moment, and making sure they're comfortable. I happened to be at one of your jam sessions mm-hmm. where there was another musician that happened to be at the bar. And you guys were gracious enough to invite him to play. He was playing another musician's instrument. Mm-hmm. What was that, bass?
Maybe.
Stand-up bass, a big, expensive instrument. And he took a solo that then you guys couldn't get him off stage.
Mm-hmm.
And you were being gracious enough to invite him into the party.
Yeah.
And then it was just a matter, this is the part of the podcast that I will bring up good manners. It has to be once a podcast.
Well, you know, I'll follow up with that. I feel like I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but when I was very young, I sat in with a guy who was a pretty well-known musician in the area I was living in at the time. And I took four choruses on Autumn Leaves. And it was my first time. I was like 19 years old or 18 years old sitting in with this guy who was a pretty well-established jazz musician. And he said one of the...
That song, but if it goes too long, it goes too long.
The one thing the guy said is, you played a good... afterwards, and one of the other musicians on the gig was like, you played a really good solo on that, but it was probably a little bit longer than you should have played for your first time sitting in with him. So just go up and apologize for that. You didn't do anything wrong, but for you to go ahead and apologize is going to show that you have some conception that you were overplaying. And so to do that, I mean, to say, I realize I've overstepped my bounds, is such an invaluable tool.
And it shows your willingness to be self-aware and to adapt.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which, you know, sometimes you overstep your boundaries. Sometimes you make a mistake. I've made a ton of them, and the key is to learn from it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes if you even give that person that heads up that you knew you messed up and you aren't always that way, that can make such a huge difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just acknowledging like where you are in life, no matter what the situation is.
Like, we're all sick right now. And, well,
I'm okay.
Maggie's not sick yet.
Yes.
But she's
not yet. I'm on my way.
But, you know, I mean, obviously we're bringing a different aesthetic. Our voices all sound a little bit more gravelly.
I did
and
just wake up, though.
We've mentioned it to the audience that that's why they're mm-hmm. hearing this, you know?
I'm going on a quasi, I don't want to call it a date,
mm-hmm.
but I have an event this evening with a gentleman that I met while I was married.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in and out of relationships. I think he might have a girlfriend right now,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not sure. I'm clearly single. I mean, you know.
Separated.
Paperwork's not through, but emotionally available. I don't know if I'm attracted to this person because the setting that I met him in earlier was when I was married and didn't have that.
The blinders were out.
Yeah, like I wasn't looking to go meet somebody because
mm-hmm.
I was with the person I was going to spend my life with.
Mm-hmm.
But we clearly had a friendship connection because we enjoyed each other's company. We kept email conversations of like when we were going to go meet at the place where I met him. But it was never sexual because I was married and he had girlfriends and this and that was understood. But now that I'm not married and we've made plans to go have drinks, I'm
mm-hmm.
not sure if he has a girlfriend or not. Like, I'm a little, you know, I'm a little fresh to this dating situation.
Oh, you will have to.
I'm a little curious of the boundaries, you know, like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially how, you know, are you going to find that little bit of information out? Are you going to wait and see if he drops?
I'm pretty sure I'm just going to, like, when the moment arises, which will probably be in the beginning of the conversation, mm-hmm. I'm sure he knows that my husband and I are separated, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to somehow mention it. And, like, most of the things in my life, even if they're really serious, like, I kind of just laugh about them because I think life is short, and nothing is that serious where you have to be, like, a Debbie Downer all the time. So I'm sure it'll come up and we'll laugh about it. And then once that's stated, I don't know, what happens next?
Yeah, well, it is fair when he says, you know, what's been happening in your life. That's a big thing that's like, been happening in your life.
You really want to know?
So I guess it's up to you, or it's either up to you to ask or for him to, you know... depending on how soon he drops that information, I think will be a big clue for you.
Yeah.
Well, it depends, too, what you're looking for.
I'm not looking for anything. I'm looking for, yeah. I mean, because we had a friendship, so, like, where we would kind of hang. And now that we're available or not, I'm curious to see if our dynamic changes. Not that I'm looking for anything, but...
But a little flirtation.
Flirtation would be nice. It'd be nice to know that, like, I mean, I'm pretty young, getting divorced and whatnot, so, like, I'm pretty sure I still got it.
Well, and on some level, I mean, it's good to go in with the idea of not looking for anything, going in with no expectations, but on another level, I always thought when I was single, I didn't go into dates with no expectations. I always had some sort of expectations, and it wasn't necessarily, like, I'm going to go out with her and sleep with her. I'm going to... This is, I mean, I would always kind of classify people as to how I saw them in relation to me, you know. Is this someone I should really start to seriously consider
mm-hmm.
as a potential partner? Or is this someone that I can just go out and have a fun time with and not really worry about any long-term ramifications with?
I think it's also different for guys and girls mm-hmm. and how they go in situations. Because... For a girl, I feel like, because I'm so used to that work situation where I'm trying to please everybody,
mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm naturally like that.
Well, and you two especially, both working in the service industry, I think have that. Whereas maybe someone who works in an area where they don't have to constantly be on.
Yeah.
If you're working in an office by yourself and you're doing whatever, you know.
It's probably easier in a dating situation to turn on. And for me, I feel like I don't know when I'm being genuine or not, because mm-hmm. it's like I always want people to be happy and I always want to be entertaining people, and I'm curious now to see my level of, like, when I overstep, like, a strange
mm-hmm.
boundary.
It's funny, because I always like to flirt. I flirt with a woman that works at the deli. I flirt with
Maggie a few minutes ago.
I flirt with Maggie. I flirt, you know, with my coworkers. It's when...
I should mention she's still rubbing Maggie's arm.
I am not. I don't know. It's when you're pushing those boundaries too far that I think it's just necessary to watch that person's reaction and learn to adapt. You know, not everyone wants to sleep with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't have to sleep with everyone you go out on a date with. And if you do, then good for you. But again, maybe that's not what every relationship needs to be.
Right. I think that the self-awareness and the adapting, if I could have one key point of this podcast, because I even think of the man that I brought up from mm-hmm. work, and I probably would have established a flirtier relationship with him, you know, being mm-hmm. bartenders together, especially at a big, busy bar, you want that dynamic. But when it's too far, too, like I said, when you're doing adolescent jokes, you know, where I have to say, yeah, that was funny in seventh grade, and then you don't change your tactic... then you're a nuisance to work with.
Well, before we wrap, let's talk a little bit about what we can do to, number one, identify if we've crossed a boundary, and number two, I mean, we've already touched on this a bit with an apology, how to remedy that and return to that professional sexual but not uncomfortable place where you're dating someone.
I think that fake laugh
mm-hmm.
can indicate a lot.
But not everybody, like, you know your fake laugh, and people close to you know your fake laugh, but people that don't know you that well, that clearly can't read your signs, don't
mm-hmm.
understand if your laugh is fake or not.
Well, I think if you are trying a tactic and someone is avoiding eye contact with
mm-hmm.
you,
Or not interacting. You
not know? Interacting, looking away, looking over their shoulder, which often is looking for someone better to talk to than you. I think a lot of times the best tactic is just to give that person space, and sometimes they'll come back and you can try a different tactic that might engage them, you know, make mm-hmm. them realize that you're not a total bore or totally obnoxious. But just really being aware of the other person's
reactions.
What are we looking for physically? I mean, in terms of signs that if, let's say, you and Maggie are out on a date and Maggie's pushing some uncomfortable buttons, what are you doing?
I think body language is a huge one. Like I said, eye contact, looking away, looking over their shoulder. It's just like where, like Cosmo always gives the advice about, you know, if the legs are crossed towards the person mm-hmm. and if they're doing the opposite,
yeah.
you know, if their body language is getting further and further away
yeah,
from
if
you,
if you saw them from afar and they look disinterested,
or if
they
look
are.
Physically like a question mark, you know, shrugging their shoulders in, hunching in, crossing their arms is a huge one. People cross their arms a lot of times to physically, you know,
mm-hmm.
present a barrier between themselves and the person that they're talking to.
Not that those symbols are always that way, because I find myself sometimes in a flirtatious situation, and I find myself with my arms crossed, and I'll think to myself, oh, that's bad body language, and I'll uncross. Or, like, I'll have my legs crossed one way and be like, oh, I'm not facing that person. I should mm-hmm. be facing. And then it's like, but I think if you have a natural chemistry, it doesn't matter what your body's doing, but also if you have a natural chemistry, your body will naturally do the right thing.
Yeah, and you're going to be interacting, and you're going to be actively engaging the other person. And that's one important thing. Like, I can go off and I can rant for 20 minutes about something, and I'm sure, Jen, you've heard me do it from time to time. Like, when we were sitting in the car today and I was yelling about the guy with the horn.
Then I had to listen to Anthony yell about the guy with the horn and the horn.
Yeah, really, I was like, which is worse, if I actually push the horn down or if I continue to talk about what a jackass this guy is? But, on some level, yes, I can engage people on that, and I'll find I do this at, like, large-scale dinner parties if things, you know, I mean, I can be very entertaining in a large group of people and just pull a group along and with a story and then engage individual members within the group from time to time, but if I'm on a one-on-one date situation or if I'm having dinner with you as a friend or something, if I'm not actively engaging you, it means I'm not successfully communicating with you. And when we're on dates, when we're on dinners with friends, or when we're having office meetings and things like that, you really need to actively engage the other person. And that's, I think, one great telltale.
Now, here's my little bit of hypocrisy, is mm-hmm. when I really like someone, you know, a lot of this podcast has been me learning
yeah.
how to date, because I am in no way an expert. I am a student. My body language will turn into a question mark. I will close off because I get very nervous when I'm genuinely attracted to someone. So that's been something on my end of constantly trying to remind myself to not shut this other person down,
yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. because I'm nervous about being,
shy.
Yeah, because I'm nervous of being rejected. So that's always been something to try to, I've always tried to remind myself to make eye contact,
mm-hmm.
to
let
those
arms go
down.
That's funny, I find myself... I find myself doing that also. Like, you're very, like, when you're totally comfortable with yourself, you could be all like, ooh, your arms are everywhere, and like your body language is like, I'm comfortable and I'm confident. And then when you're actually in the presence of somebody that you really enjoy their company, and you're sort of a little unsure,
and you feel a little bit vulnerable
feel,
about it, and
yeah,
that's reflected in your language,
and then you sort of get a little shy. But I think there's even a difference between when you like somebody and you're, you know, your shoulders are shrugged a little, and when you're just clearly creeped out by somebody and your shoulders are shrugged. Like, there's a different kind of shrug.
It's a different energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. There's also times when I've liked someone or been attracted to someone that hasn't necessarily been the best for me, and I've noticed that when it is someone that's maybe a better connection, that nervous energy isn't as intense. It doesn't feel as forced.
Let's talk a little bit about the physical end of it, too. If you... If you're out on a date with someone and they cross some sort of a physical line, whether it's they've touched you on the arm too long, or it's President Clinton and he takes his dick out and puts it on your leg, what can you do to kind of rebound from that? If you're the guy or the girl who's made the unwanted advance,
well, if you pull out your privates,
yeah. Well, I mean, obviously that's a special.
You can't really go back from that.
Yeah, if you're unless you're the free leader of the free world, and then
even then, like. President Obama, you're pretty attractive, yeah. but if you pulled your wang out in front of me, I'd be creeped out and question the way that I voted.
I think there's a lot of power in a genuine apology, mm-hmm. not an, you know, exhausted. Just don't put it all on the other person. Don't put all your apologetic energy or your creepy energy or your sexual energy on that other person and expect them to make the world for you.
Mm-hmm. And if you've done something like that, like if you've demanded a hug or demanded a kiss, like there have been times where like somebody would, I mean, this has happened a few times recently since people have learned that I'm not with my husband anymore, and they're, to them, they think there's a flirtation, but to me, I'm just doing my job, and they've sort of like, ooh, I'm gonna kiss you right now, and it's like, what in your universe made you think that I would want to kiss you? And then once there was no kiss, then the next time I see him, ugh, Sue would just totally kiss you right now. It's like, well, the first time there was no kiss, so should have learned.
What do you wonder though, if in those situations they're not doing that to, if they're not getting a rise out of some, not actually kissing you, you know, but saying it, vocalizing it, and if that's what's in it for them, you know, the physical act of putting themselves out there on some level, but a level they know it's going to be rejected, you know, if there's not another psycho, I don't know what the word would be, another mental issue going on there, you know?
You know, this is something we tried to touch on last week with the disengaging, rejecting people, but it's something that I still need advice on myself. You know, if anyone listens to this and wants to leave their two cents, they can go to Page 4 Entertainment and leave a post.
Yeah, the comment box.
In the comment box of this podcast, I'd love to hear your feedback. So the ability to disengage from unwanted contact, like that hug or when people say that they, you know, are trying to initiate that they, or hint that they would, broadly hint that they would like to kiss you. Mm-hmm. It's something I'm still learning how to disengage from. You know, we touched on it last week in the disengaging / rejecting episode.
Well, if you have to tell someone you're going to kiss them, it's probably not a good sign.
That's true. That, I mean, like, know, that's a great really point. I never like that, can I kiss you?
Yeah, like,
you
just
know.
Yeah, you either know
if
or
you have to ask, the answer is no.
Yeah.
If it's not obvious, well, unless, like, you're totally, like, I mean, because there have been times where, like, I've been in a situation where you're clearly, like, already touching and comfortable and, like, in the face, and you've probably kissed before if you're that close in a situation where somebody's been like, I'm going to kiss you right now. It's like, and it sounds lame, but then it's kind of okay. But if it's, like, initial, you've never kissed before, you don't know this person's,
right.
like, mm-hmm. situation, asking or saying that you're going to kiss or hug is, like, clearly.
And if you've never gotten, like, close enough to me long enough for a long hug, it's probably not okay to kiss me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If anyone has any advice about this or their own two cents, please leave it in the comment box at Page 4 Entertainment for this episode. You can also please like us on Facebook. We have a Page 4 Entertainment page and also Page 4 Music.
Page 4 Music.
Is that our sister or our brother page?
Our sibling. I think
it is
the brother page.
Our sibling page. Yes, we would love to hear your feedback. We are also having a live event on February 12th at the 1010 Studios in Long Island City. That's going to be our Valentine's Day episode.
Yeah, it's
going to
be really a cool little event. We're going to have
a fun party.
It is. It's going to be great. We're going to have my jazz trio is going to be playing. You can come at 8 o'clock and hear us play a set of music. At 9 o'clock, we're going to start a live podcast taping, the focus of which is going to be on, what do you look for in a partner? And it's not just in dating. It's going to be, what do you look for in a musical partner, in a podcast partner, in a professional partner? And we're going to narrow it then to, what do you look for in a partner that you can have a long-term relationship with?
Are you going to ask people at the event these
Absolutely,
questions?
Yeah.
They are,
and people can come, that after we tape the podcast, we're going to have the opportunity for you who have come to the event to sit and mingle and talk to us about what you look for in a partner. We'll have plenty of interactive capacities there. And
I'll also be serving some Valentine's Day Prosecco cocktails.
Yeah, we've had a couple
delicious.
Of them today. They taste great.
We tested them before this podcast.
It's going to be an open bar.
Two thumbs up.
So please come and give your two cents. And, you know, this partnership that I've established with Anthony working on this podcast has taught me a lot. You know, there's all sorts of partnerships, roommate partnerships, you know, business partnerships, and the partnership or ships that you try to get into, you know, romantically. And that entails so much, learning to disagree, learning to live with someone, learning mm-hmm. to work with someone as a partner. And everyone has their different, you know, ideal goal of what they're looking for. Not everyone wants that 1950s picket fence.
Yeah.
You know, but what do you want?
And not every partnership is right for that. I mean, we have a professional partnership on this level, and I think we're also establishing a friendship partnership, too. And so it's kind of, when we're in friend mode, we're not necessarily in podcast mode. And when we're in podcast mode, we're not necessarily in friend mode. And are we getting together to have dinner and talk about the podcast, or are we getting together to have dinner and talk about something else entirely different, you know?
If you always mention the podcast, you can always write it off on your taxes.
Oh, we don't think we don't know that, too.
We have been collecting a lot of receipts. Well, Maggie, the same thing, like, when we've worked together, you know, you have, working in that business, professional partnership, this is the same with the gentleman I keep talking about earlier. You know, when I'm setting up for work, I'm not good at talking about my day, talking about what else is going on. I'm very focused until things are set up. And then once that's done, you know, I want to chillax and yeah. talk. And then after work, when you're having that cocktail, when you're going out, it's also setting the boundary of not talking about work then for another
yeah.
2 hours.
Yeah.
And that's when you, you know, can get to know your coworkers on another level.
Yeah. And also the compromise of, like, when I get to work, I just want to put everybody in a good mood. Sometimes people are like, I just need to decompress. And then finding, like, the even boundary of, like, where that is so that after work that cocktail is more enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. And... you know, you had said this before a while ago, and it's something I had taken to heart, in these relationships, is just not everybody thinks the same way you do. So as you're setting these boundaries, you just have to understand that they're coming from a completely different
mindset. Everybody has a story and an experience. And...
yeah. So if you want to come and party with us on February 12th, the tickets are going to be $20. That includes open bar, Anthony's performance, the live podcast, and also $10 off to LIC Restaurant in Long Island City, which is right around the corner if you want to go there for the after party.
It's a pretty good deal. I mean, there's a lot you get for your $20 ticket, and it really only costs you $10 if you go have a drink or a meal up the street.
And I've been to that restaurant, and $10 is... They're pretty good.
Yeah.
It gets you a lot.
Get you a lot for $10.
Yeah, you can have some really good drinks and snacks there. So come
get the
come
fried chicken. It's really good.
So I think that's it for Page Four Entertainment. I'm Jennifer Faulkner with Anthony CK. Thank you, Maggie, so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. This was fun.
Thanks for coming.
And we'll talk to you next week.